Norman Ohler is a German novelist and historian, author of the New York Times bestselling book, Blitzed, about drug use in Nazi Germany. Turns out, there was quite a lot of it, and previous historians had skipped it over. We talked about how he uncovered it, his process as a writer, and what his plans are for his next book.
I am here with Norman Ohler, the author of Blitzed. Norman, thanks for so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So I wanted to talk to you first off about how you came upon this idea for this book, because you're a novelist, screenwriter. What made you decide to do a history book, or what got you interested?
Well, a friend of mine told me about the crazy drug use in Nazi Germany, and I thought this is a spectacular topic for a novel. But then when I did start my research, which quickly turned into academic research at several archives in Germany and the United States, I realized that the true story to be found here is much more interesting than any fiction could come up with. So I ventured down that, for me, unknown road of writing a nonfiction book. And it turned out to be, I think, the right genre for this topic.
What I had read was you came upon this sort of archive material that suggested drug use that apparently a lot more bookish historians were not aware of the implications, and that sort of your background and like rave culture gave you an insight that perhaps these people did not have. Do you think that's fair to say?
Certainly. All the other biographers of Hitler have noticed that there's a strange doctor called Theo Morell around the so-called Führer quite a lot, and they might have even looked at or glanced over the notes. I'm not sure, because they don't really get into what happened between Morell and Hitler. They just write that Morell gave Hitler a lot of medicines and maybe strange drugs, but they don't really, no one has examined before what actually was given to him. And it's not that easy actually to decipher the handwriting of Morell. You have to speak German for sure, and you have to spend a lot of time with it and try to figure out which medicines are actually the potent ones. So you have to know a little bit about drugs and medicines. You have to understand that Oikodal, which he administers a lot, has as its active ingredient oxycodone, and then you have to understand what it means to inject 20 milligrams of oxycodone intravenously. So you have to have some kind of knowledge or grasp of what drugs are. And my background, my background's not rave culture, but I just grew up in Berlin, and Berlin there are a lot of clubs and a lot of drugs. So I just know probably more about these phenomena than a historian who works at Cambridge and who doesn't leave the library.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know where I got rave culture. I think I read that in a review somewhere. So who is this doctor of his? Could you talk about him a little bit? Did Hitler reach out and say, "I need something to get me perked up," or was this doctor saying to himself, "Oh, he actually needs this medicine"? How did this drug use start, I guess?
Hitler had one main problem, and that was gas and bloating and stomach cramps. And his doctors were not able to cure this. And in 1936, through his friend Hoffmann, who was his photographer, he met a doctor from Berlin called Theo Morell. And Morell gave him a medicine called Mutaflor against the gas and the bloating, and that actually worked. So he kind of thought that Morell is a good doctor, and they got along well on a personal level. And That's why Hitler appointed him, to the surprise of everyone, as his personal physician, because he was a complete outsider. He was not in the military, or he was not in the SS, or he didn't have any rank or standing. He was just he was a type of celebrity doctor coming in from Berlin through Hitler's friend Hoffmann.
I see. So what impact, if any, do you think that we can discern that this sort of drug use had on his decision-making?
We can see that in the late phase of World War II, 43 and especially 44, Hitler becomes very fond of oxycodone, which has, if you inject it intravenously, a very strong euphoric-making effect. So he used it in order to stay on top of his game, to be able to remain convincingly towards his generals who would come back from the front lines with very bad news. So Hitler used a lot of oxy and also cocaine, which he used in the summer of 1944, to be basically in a good mood and to remain, to be able to remain on his track, basically. So the drugs, in a way, stabilized his paranoid worldview.
Yeah, that's so clearly it didn't. His original image as he was rising to power was that of a teetotaler, like a guy who was totally abstinent from drugs. Was that something that they had to keep under wraps then, obviously?
Well, it was a very important part of the Führer propaganda to show him as this abstinent person who was totally clean. This changed very much when he got closer and closer to Morel, because Morel would actually give him an injection, one or two injections a day, which, if you do the math, that's thousands of injections between 1936 and 1945. So Hitler might not have drunk any alcohol, for example, and might not have smoked cigarettes, but he still received pharmaceuticals on a daily level. So it's a complete opposite picture of what the propaganda was projecting to the outside world.
And one of the things that's interesting, the title of the book is Blitzed, and that's obviously in reference to the Blitzkriegs. But what I didn't know was that they were actually producing amphetamines on an industrial scale and giving them to soldiers. Could you talk a little bit about the role of drugs in the military at that time?
Well, the German army was the first army in the world to use synthetic drugs on a large scale, this started in 1938 when methamphetamine came onto the market in Nazi Germany. It was a legal product labeled as Pervitin. That was the brand name. You could get it over the counter in any pharmacy and drugstore. And it was pure methamphetamine. It was a new invention. No one in Germany in the beginning thought of it as a dangerous drug. It was not restricted at all. Became very popular drug amongst the civilian population. There was a professor who was working for the army. He was responsible for performance enhancement of the army. Professor Ranke was his name, and he found out that methamphetamine taken in larger dosages could prevent sleep and also reduces your fear level. And he thought these two aspects might be very interesting for the German army. So he started tests among young medical officers, gave them methamphetamine, and concluded that methamphetamine should be used by the whole army. And this is actually what took place, especially in the attack on France in the spring of 1940, when 35 million dosages of methamphetamine were being ordered by the army, were being used by the soldiers, and contributed contributed to these surprising success in this campaign.
Wait, did you say 35 million?
Yeah, 35 million doses were ordered from the Tembla company, which produced methamphetamine by the Wehrmacht, and were shipped to the front lines for this campaign against the West.
Oh, so the entire army then must have just been hopped up on speed.
Well, I examined closely how the methamphetamine was distributed, and it shows that especially the tank troops, the panzer divisions led by Rommel, Guderian, von Kleist, were using most of the methamphetamine because they were leading advance into France, and so they were all on methamphetamine. They were using that. There was a special stimulant decree issued by the army, which regulated the methamphetamine usage. So it was, you were supposed to take a pill, then wait for a couple of hours, then take the next pill, then wait a little bit long, take the third pill. So they were actually going weeks on methamphetamine. So they were, and then the decisive part of the advance were the tank divisions. They kind of invented the blitzkrieg on methamphetamine as they went along.
Wow. So do you think that, because one of the things you mentioned in the book is the French were just so shocked at how fast their armies were moving, the German armies were moving. Do you think they would not have been successful had they not used amphetamines?
Well, it's very hard to say. The campaign relied on the factor of time and speed, because they had to be in Sedan within 3 days and 3 nights to cut off the Western allies from the French homeland, and that's what they were able to do with methamphetamine. Question is, would they have been able to walk march 3 days and three nights without methamphetamine? Probably not, because a human being cannot stay awake for 3 days and three nights without the help of stimulants. Stimulants is difficult. So they would not have been as fast, that's for sure. So the whole campaign might have collapsed, but that's speculation. We just don't know. We only know that with methamphetamine, this incredible speed that was decisive for the victory could be achieved.
And how popular was the drug use then among the regular German population?
Well, Pervitin was a big hit. It was used by all flights of life. Workers used it to be able to work, to have a higher output in the factory. Hair cutters used it to cut more hair. It was even marketed in chocolate. There was a methamphetamine-laced chocolate called Hildebrand, which had the slogan, Hildebrand chocolate's always a delight. So housewives used it. It basically used as we use coffee or green tea these days.
Wow. Does that, I'm sure you've had some people criticize on the grounds that, you know, this could absolve people of moral responsibility. What's your take on that?
Well, let's look at the planning first. None of the planning for the war and then later for the genocide against the Jews had anything to do with drugs. So it was not that they used drugs and then decided to invade Europe and kill the Jews. This is all based on the ideology of National Socialism. So the drugs are not the reason for evil. Evil scheme, the evil scheme of the Third Reich. If you look at a normal soldier who goes into battle, I mean, it's always the question, how responsible is the soldier who's receiving orders and is maybe has an ideology that he believes in, like freedom or national socialism or communism. I mean, people get indoctrinated by systems and just act and follow orders and do horrible crimes. In my mind, people who pull the trigger are responsible for what they do, and I would consider them murderers, actually. So for me, it's not an excuse to, let's say, use methamphetamine and then, you know, kill other people. I don't, and in my book I make it very clear that that's how I see it. So I don't think it excuses people, actually.
Yeah, no,
and on methamphetamine, it's not like that. On methamphetamine, you don't know what you're doing anymore. I mean, you're very clear, your head's very clear, you're very focused, you're very energetic. So it's not like they were like in a trance and weren't aware of what's going on. They knew exactly what was going on. They were invading another country.
Yeah, no, I agree. Having done this work of history and put it out, what was the reaction in Germany, by the way? Was it different at all than you got around the world, or no? Were people surprised, or did they look back and say, oh, yeah, I remember how common this was?
Actually, yeah, I got a lot of emails from people saying now they understand why older people, why they received still a Pervitin in the 50s from their parents for breakfast when they had to do an exam at school, because Pervitin didn't leave Germany when the war was over. It was still there in the 50s. So the reactions in Germany were very interested, for sure. But basically, the reactions are the same everywhere in the world. People are very interested in that story because it makes them understand what happened on the battlefields a little better.
Yeah. What I was going to ask about, now that you've done a work of history, do you think that that's something that you're going to continue to pursue? Or you kind of just, I mean, has it changed you at all as a writer?
Well, in fact, I'm writing another nonfiction book. I actually finished it yesterday. So in a way, it did. The success of Blitz kind of lured me into writing another nonfiction book. But it's more about people. It's about young people who lived in Berlin during that time and who decided to do something against the dictatorship. So it's very much a book about people, but it is a nonfiction book. And I kind of enjoy the genre, even though I would not say that I will not write a novel anymore, because that's also what I truly enjoy. So I think Blitz opened for me the way to also write nonfiction books. So I think I would go. I would work in both genres now.
That's interesting. What for you, when you find a story? So when you found this story originally, you made a choice to take it from being a novel to a work of nonfiction. Did a similar thing happen with this book, or how do you make that choice?
Well, with this book, it was clear from the start it would be a nonfiction book. With Blitzed, it wasn't clear because I'd never written a nonfiction book, so that was more of a process of finding the right way to tell the story. That's why it also took longer. It took 5 years to write Blitzed, and the new book took about 2 years. Because I knew from the start it would be a nonfiction book, so I didn't, you know, write fictional episodes for nothing, as I did in Blitz. There's a lot of fictional stuff in Blitz that's obviously not used.
And so, can we expect that? I guess, I mean, you know, maybe you don't want to talk about that, but is this next book something that's going to be coming out fairly soon?
It's coming out in the U.S. in the spring of 2020. So next spring, it's going to come out in the U.S. It's going to the translator in, I think, late February, and then he will have his fun translating it.
Okay. And has anyone approached you about doing a movie based on Blitzed or your latest book? Because, I mean, it seems like, you know, I understand why you would want to turn that into a novel or into a fictional experience. It's definitely a gripping story.
Well, actually, Paramount has optioned the rights for Blitzed, and they want to do a film which seems to be focusing on the relationship between Morell and Hitler, which I also think is the best, you know, story to focus on in the universe of Blitzed. So that should be quite interesting.
Definitely. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I know we got a shaky internet connection. So I just want to say thank you so much, Norman, for taking the time to do this. Definitely took a while, but glad that we could make it happen.
Yeah, sure. It was a pleasure talking to you. Send me a link, please, when you put it out there.
For sure. Will do. All right. Have a good one.
Okay. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks so much.
Ciao.
Thank you to Norman Oler, and thank you for listening to Dunk Tank. See you next time.